Every Contact Leaves a Trace, written by Eleanor Dimont and read by Mark Meadows.
A note for the reader. At the very end of December 2007, Alex Peterson met Ian Schoenherr, illustrator and cartographer. The two men became friends, and Alex began to tell Ian a version of the story you are about to read. In the months that followed, Ian drew several maps for his friend of the places he had spoken of, thus giving his story back to him, having shaped it for him anew. One of those maps was of Worcester College, Oxford, as Alex had described it in the course of telling his tale. From The Devil is an Ass by Ben Jonson. Have you seen the white lily grow before rude hands have touched it? Have you marked the fall of the snow before the soil hath smutched it? Have you felt the wool of beaver or swan's down ever? Or have smelt a bud of the briar or the nard in the fire? Or have tasted the bag of the bee? Oh, so white, oh, so soft, oh, so sweet is she. From Manuel de Technique Policière by Edmond Locard. Il est impossible aux malfaiteurs d'agir, et surtout d'agir avec l'intensité que suppose l'action criminelle, sans laisser des traces de son passage. Ces traces sont extrêmement diverses. Il faut avoir présent à l'esprit que, dans chaque affaire, on peut en trouver d'une sorte différente. From The Most Excellent and Lamentable Tragedy of Romeo and Juliet, Act 1, Scene 1, by William Shakespeare. Benvolio. I do but keep the peace. Put up thy sword, or manage it to part these men with me. Prologue. London, Friday the 21st of December 2007, early morning. If you were to ask me to tell you about my wife, I would have to warn you at the outset that I don't know a great deal about her. Or at least, not as much as I thought I did. And I would go on to say that reaching such a conclusion, if I can call it that, has been for me a process of discovery. I went into a dark room with my camera for a time, and I came out with a photograph of a woman I had never seen before. It is perhaps because of these fluctuating states of knowing and unknowing that when I'm asked that sort of a question, I find it a little difficult to decide where to start. She died 6 months ago, almost to the hour, on Midsummer night in Oxford, underneath a great and spreading plane that grows in the gardens of Worcester College as you walk down to the lake, the bridge to the Provost's garden somewhere on your right-hand side, and a new moon rising. That was where I found her body. It is, as a place to begin, as good as any other, or I suppose as a place to die. As a place to have your head stove in by someone bringing a stone, lifted from the lake and still covered in weed and scum, down onto your skull 6 or 7 times as you crouch to the grass, your face getting closer to it with each blow until at the 4th you give up and sink into it, smelling memories there, and the moistness of the evening, and wishing things had turned out differently. I do not think she would have minded being brought this close to the ground when she died. Had the choice been left to her, she would doubtless have selected some other method. But the grass itself, the fact that it was damp, and that it stained her dress in the way that it did, that would not have troubled her. She was the sort of person who would sit down on a lawn, whatever she was wearing, or kneel on damp earth if she wanted to. And after all, that was exactly what she did the night I met her at Richard's wedding, the night before the morning she agreed to become my wife.